coming up on this episode of the Leadership Lounge.
You can always find good people, but always remember that somebody's A player might be your C player. And somebody's C player might be your A player. And that doesn't mean they are not good people. You have to hire for the right folks at the right time. If I needed somebody who's gonna help me the next 18 months, I gotta fit that. Sometimes people think like you're gonna hire somebody for the next 5 years. Well, what's important 3 years down the road may not be important today.
Welcome to Leadership Lounge. My name is Mitch Slater, Executive Director, UBS New York City, and I'm joined by my colleague, Saman Sami, First Vice President, Wealth Management from Dallas, Texas. And the best way to contact us is by emailing mitchslater@ubs.com or samansami@ubs.com. Our guest is not affiliated with UBS.
Welcome to the Leadership Lounge, powered by UBS. I'm Mitch Slater. On this show, we sit down with some of the world's most accomplished entrepreneurs, founders, and business leaders to go beyond the headlines and unpack the stories, decisions, and leadership lessons behind their success. Today, we are excited to be joined by Das Noble, founder and CEO of MTX Group. From humble beginnings to building a global technology business at the forefront of innovation, AI, and digital transformation, Das has an incredible story to tell, not just about business growth, but about leadership, family, intentionality, and legacy. Das, welcome to the Leadership Lounge.
Thank you very much, Mitch. Very excited to be here with you all.
Great.
Das, thank you so much for joining. Welcome to the Leadership Lounge. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, your humble beginnings? You have quite the story to tell us.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Look, my wife and I, we both were born in Bangladesh, and we came to the U.S. in a different time. For me, it was 1996. My mom and dad, they won lottery to come to the U.S. and started the high school at Albany City School and then go to college. When you look at U.S., you look at the typical American dream, right? You get your education, and you look at eventually getting into the professional work environment, and then hopefully you do something that will create meaningful outcomes for that community. So very humble at that journey. One thing that I always look at is that my dad and my mom both were hardworking. And for them to give up what they were enjoy doing and come here and take an odd job, and for my dad specifically, he became a dishwasher in a restaurant. And for him to be able to sacrifice his career so we could have a better life, it didn't click at the early stage when we were teenagers. Right. However, thinking back, when we start to enter the workforce, is that how do we do something with that meaningful gift that were given to us? And that maybe contribute to some of the things we've kind of, you know, kept in mind while making decisions, and here we are.
I love that meaningful gift. I mean, and that's really, truly what your parents did. And I just that's a story that never gets old, right?
You know,
just, you know. So let's just push forward a little bit. So when you founded MTX, all right, what problem were you trying to solve in the marketplace, and what gave you the conviction to bet on yourself and go all in?
Great question. So one of the things that I always recommend to entrepreneurs is that don't get infatuated with your ideas. It's gonna come down to the problems you gotta go solve that market is gonna demand. And for me, it has been very evident that I spent 4 years at Silicon Valley in the technology consulting space. And I knew that entrepreneurship is the journey that I wanna embark on. However, spend some time thinking through is there a specific market that I could add a value? And for us, luckily, coming out of the technology and the cloud space, we saw that public sector was 10, 15 years behind technology. Obviously, there's a lot of red tapes. There are processes. You know, government could be risk adverse at times. So it makes sense. We looked at it as an opportunity to bring the cloud technology experience in that space. So I saw government as an untapped market. And if we can help them achieve whatever the outcomes they're looking to achieve over the next 5 to 10 years, and that was the market that we looked at. So it's an untapped market, problem that we can go help solve, where they would go from either paper-based system or legacy systems to these modernized technology that makes people invoking their government service easier, and also the staff within the government agency, they would enjoy doing the work, especially given the workforce that we get to have these days, mm-hmm. where if we don't give them some of the best and technology out there, we would be asking the young workforce to use smartphone at home and mm-hmm. their personal life, then go use a rotary phone right. at work.
Right.
That wasn't going to inspire them.
Not good
them.
To be on a delay. You want to be on time with everyone else.
Exactly. Yeah. And so luckily, government and space agreed that they got to go do these things, and we became one of those trusted partners. Mm-hmm. Now, you asked, what are the things that allowed me to bet on myself?
Right.
So I have three-prong approach to these questions, and I'm going to start with first, Nipa, my mm-hmm. business partner and also wife, mm-hmm. and also amazing mother of the two mm-hmm. children that we have. Having her side by side gives me an immense confidence. And I mean, there is nothing else gives me more confidence than having her support, having her sounding voice along the way every day. So she's my number one cornerstone in that journey. The second, I have some really, really good founders with me. Mm-hmm. And I call them my co-founder business partners. And they have put their trust in me to go through this. And it gives me a lot of confidence, early days. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is, for me, having come from simple life, having the opportunity to be in the U.S. and do something, I always believed in myself that I was meant to do something great. Mm-hmm. But not just for me. It was for people that are around me, I can help them elevate. And then also, whatever the communities we serve, I created really meaningful outcomes for them. And that was important. And so that personal belief that I can go out there, do anything that I want. And of course, we have done that, go from $0 to $100 million in 5 years, self-funded,
right.
in a very highly regulated space.
Right.
That is very difficult.
Yeah.
And that personal belief really culminated along with some of these other things that I've mentioned to go accomplish some of those things year in, year out. There was nothing easy about it. But there are times you think about, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. Right? But there's a bigger purpose in life
right.
that constantly aligned with my beliefs that quitting is an option, mm-hmm. and you got to constantly show up and move on.
And that's actually a good segue, because entrepreneurship is not a straight line. And one of my favorite parts about being at UBS is meeting people like you. And we met like 4 years ago, and I came to your office every month just to check in. But it's not a straight line. So tell us about maybe a specific example of a big challenge that you had to face. And you said you had Nipa alongside with you, co-founders, but tell our listeners about some of the challenges.
Yeah.
Building a company that's doing over $100 million in revenue.
Right. We go through a lot of challenges. A few notables would be when you hire employees, staff, and you look to scale, the early days, first 2, 3, 4 years, especially self-funded, payroll has been always that challenging topic every month.
Yeah.
If you're successful co-founders, you could relate to that. Then you go to bed looking at the ceiling, thinking how you're going to make your payroll the next month. And that has been always constantly out there. But I'll give you one particular thing is that very, very challenging. In the first year and in the third year, is that our bank account went negative. We want to keep on paying the payroll and other things. And if the cash collection is a little bit behind, you know, you really figure out is that cash becomes king in entrepreneurial journey. But this is very common amongst a lot of successful entrepreneurs that you think about payroll before going to sleep and you max your credit card early days. But that's part of those little stepping stone that you got to go through, recognize that that's never going to go away. That only increases
as you scale.
As you scale, your payrolls get bigger and bigger. So that negative bank account early days, Nipa and I are going all in, and we have two boys. We always make sure that we have food, medicine, and shelter.
Right,
those are the three things as an entrepreneur. And you create, hopefully, a 18 months runway.
Right.
And you go all in. For Nipa and I to be in this, and then dealing with these little adversity here and there is a constant reminder that if you really believe for the greater good and for the long run, you can overcome those. So that was one of those things that stands out to me. You know, initially I was a little bit ashamed to share that with Nipa. But I also don't want to have to worry about it because I knew that we have revenue, we have recognized milestones, they're going to come in. But those adversity really teaches you to kind of really harness and dig deeper inside your beliefs.
Do you think it keeps you on your toes a little bit when you go all in like that all the time? Because you're a person that goes all in.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I admire about you. But does that keep you on your toes? When things don't go well, you still continue to believe.
Yeah, and there is going to be, you can be fearful about a lot of things in life. To truly be successful in something, you got to go all in.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want to do something, you take 100% of that effort. And can't have your mind in two different boats, in two different legs, in two different boats on that side. So I'm a big believer that go all in. A lot of things don't work out, but if you do your homework and you make decisions based on the information that you have, absolutely. One thing entrepreneurs can do is overanalyze and sit on things for too long. You got to make decisions constantly, move forward.
Right. One of the things I can attest to, I've seen this company go from double-digit EBITDA to negative EBITDA to then him putting his head down again and back up to double-digit EBITDA in record speed. It's unbelievable.
You know, Sammy, I think what that points to is really what I wanted to talk to you next is leadership. Because ultimately, you know, in order to have that kind of success, leadership is really key. Before I ask you what I was going to specifically ask you, who are your leadership heroes? Are there some that, you know, along the way, either that you just admired or you took a little bit from here, a little bit from there?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked for two CEOs directly, very closely, and the first one was very personable. And that was a small company in Albany, New York, back in the days. And we collaborate a lot. And he would have dinner with me once a week. And that's a negotiation that we did. I helped him accomplish a lot of things. And that allowed me to kind of build that one-to-one relationship and really pick his brain. And then the second person is, and that was Don Buskard. And then the second CEO that I really admire was Chris Bourbon. I was in Silicon Valley. And watching him focus on culture and drive certain things has really inspired me. So you kind of take the little bit of the best of the ideas from different organizations. And of course, I look at Elon Musk. Elon Musk probably the most, from a purely from an entrepreneur, and just tackling challenges, problem solving, probably my role model in the way I look at that. And of course, Phil Knight, who founded Nike, So, and his journey, going through that. So both of those founders really inspires me on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think from taking all of those, that helps evolve your own leadership skills, And it helps you, you know, scale everything together that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we have seen that anytime you bring in people around you, when you're looking to scale, you got to put processes, control, and the good right people around those processes. With specific target. One thing that Nipa shared with me and I tend to share with other people is that she said that just always remember, you can always find good people, but always remember that somebody's A player might be your C player. And somebody's C player might be your A player. And that doesn't mean they're not good people.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're not capable. Running a different level of organization, startup versus midsize as we are versus large scale, the challenges, the processes, and activities may be different. And we have seen that tend to be true is that I have hired folks that wasn't exactly a rock star in their previous organization, Not that they don't have that capability, but they became an amazing rock star in our organization because of the right people. And we've seen that vice versa as well. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to is that you have to hire for the right folks at the right time. If I needed somebody who's going to help me the next 18 months, mm-hmm. I got to fit that. Sometimes people think like you're going to hire somebody for the next 5 years. Well, what's important 3 years down the road may not be important today. It will just solve that today and maybe tomorrow. And that's something we try to keep in mind is that and through that process, you scale, you put the control and processes. So I've learned a lot and try to elevate others around that.
Right, right.
You know, every entrepreneur has scars and tough moments. What's one that fundamentally like changed in the way you lead? Because I've seen you lead 4 years from now, a year ago, and then now I was just at your MTX gala mm-hmm. with 500 people in the room and everyone's jacked up to be there. What is something that fundamentally changed how you lead as you evolve as a leader?
So you have seen our people and our leaders and our mm-hmm. culture up close. We do these, we very much care about the culture and the people, how they feel, because the tools, the process we bring in internally also enhances their experience and how they lead and what role that they play. From a SCAR perspective, we have a lot. You know, this is the 11th year for us mm-hmm. in that journey. I'll share a few things that is a constant reminder that there isn't always an existential threat in that journey. And one of those scars would be is that I mean, we had to go through the COVID pandemic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was like 12 months, right? Yeah. Nobody knew, right? It's hard to forecast, predict, and decide the right partners. Right. So having the right partners or not having for a couple of period, mm-hmm. right? We had one of the largest bank in the U.S. on the corporate side that helped us early on, more small. And what the scar was that the team then go from a small market to mid-market, but even at the mid-market, couldn't quite scale with us fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And access to capital created a challenge. And we have the pandemic. So that's something that was very, very challenging for 24 months for us to navigate a lot of different things. And think about when the pandemic started, we jumped on helping government solve their problems.
Right.
People were dying. And so we jumped on with our contracts, whatnot, and then contracts followed. Sometimes your AR would get resolved maybe 9 months, 12 months, 16 months down the road, but the capital is still needed, and I didn't have the right banking partner. So that's one of those mm-hmm. things that was really, really difficult. And we do have, obviously, on the corporate side, the right banking partners, and we'll continue to evolve on that. The other one would be is that we have seen people lose family members either mm-hmm. to COVID or just people have cancer and other things. People don't talk about it, so I like to use this platform is that running a business, you have your own challenges, whether it's payroll, scaling, people, regulation, whatnot. Oftentimes people don't talk about that when you have thousands of staff in your organization, you're not only representing them, the people behind them as well. Those are the family members who may be having struggles. So nobody talks about those, but that's something that we always have to deal with is that we want to be a good partner with them mm-hmm. when they go back home and deal with their adversities. And how do you go there? So it constantly lives in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You can't forget about that.
No, and you know, let's talk about this for a second because I think it lives in your mind and it lives in your heart. And you went through a very unexpected situation a little over a year ago. If you don't mind, I'd love if you'd share a little bit about that because there's just so many lessons that you've shared publicly about it before. And I think it's just so critical. And I'd love our audience to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it is very near and dear in terms of my own health scare.
Right.
And I take the platform to always raise awareness mm-hmm. for others. January 5th, 2025, I was home and I have a full-blown major heart attack that leads to 100% blockage in my arteries and I have 3 hours to live. And living in a metro town in Dallas, we have the best or some of the best medical services right. available. And I was lucky enough to be able to go in time to the ER and have a procedure and survive on that. One of the statistics that talks about is that 9 out of 10 people, according to American Heart Association, don't survive heart attack outside the hospital. Think about that, 9 out of 10.
Wow.
So I feel incredibly lucky to be one of those 10% of people. And, you know, 3 days in the hospital and then 2 months of bed rest, I thought about a lot is that we tend to not give our health enough priority. I think we can try to balance. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage a lot of people to go see their cardiologist constantly. Don't wait for those. If you have to go 2-3 times a year, go do that. And there is some numbers, and I was tracking for a while. 375 plus CEOs or founders around the globe within 12 months ended up going seeing their cardiologist. Some of them reached out and thanked us. A lot of people that has history in their family, even they haven't been going to their cardiologist. So I recommend that. But for us, it was a great adversity, and now Nipa and I and the kids, we kind of overcome on that. It is something that we see this constantly. It is the number one killer in terms of the heart disease in the U.S. Right. and maybe the globe. And I strongly recommend that your audiences who are listening is that go see your doctor.
And I'm going to second that emotion, so to speak, as I haven't shared this on the show, but I had open heart surgery last year, and I never would have known of it at all if I hadn't been seeing a cardiologist every 6 months to discover what my issue was, which I had a little bit of time to take care of. You had very little time. But the lesson is still the same, is that, you know, we all have one life to live, and every moment is precious, and especially as parents, we realize that. And see your doctor, always.
Yeah. And well, I'm glad you're here, healthy, right, with us.
Yes.
And it is something that we want to make sure that people take it as a priority. You know, there's going to be kids' commitment, there's going to be life commitment, corporate commitment, business, I mean, whatever it is. But your health is the best asset, and I recommend that. I wouldn't slow down any other ways, right? But I do take a meaningful steps to go constantly, right? And I encourage other people as well.
I have to ask a follow-up question. You've had incredible highs and lows, as we can hear. You won the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award, 2021 National Award. Mm-hmm. You've gone through challenges. This was arguably the biggest challenge. How did you pivot? What did you do immediately to change? Because I have seen it personally, but I'd like for our audience to know, other entrepreneurs, after something like that, where your wife had to watch you go through that, your kids had to go, what immediate changes did you make?
Yeah, and good question, and people always ask that similar question. As an entrepreneur, you can't take the problem-solving mind and then the passion out of me, right? So I'm gonna, and especially when I'm around client, it is like, it's fun, it's exciting.
Right.
It's exciting to watch our clients be immensely grateful, to have partners like us who go through this and celebrate. So, and I talked about is that with my family and others, that what are the things I could really change? And I created a scorecard in terms of what I do well or what I don't do well. And I always eat one meal a day.
Mm-hmm.
And try to, if I'm home, try to have meals with the kids during dinner time. That's the best time. And I run, I'm active. And so when I look at those things, there's two things came out that I figured that I should do more. One, I wasn't sleeping enough.
Mm.
First 3-4 years when you were surviving,
right,
building, moving, you didn't have the people to do all these things that I have now. And I realized that I haven't made the adjustment. And maybe it made sense for the first couple of years to go out there, sacrifice on your sleep. But I didn't necessarily have to live exactly the same way because I have good people around me, mm-hmm, at the C-suite and the mid-level management. So one of the things that changed was I sleep 90 minutes more.
Good.
And that means I don't put an alarm clock. And I wake up when my body wants to wake up. And I can afford to do that. Now, if an entrepreneur who's building, this is their first year, right? That may be different things, right?
Yeah.
But there is going to be time that you can go and have those options. The second thing is that I need to go out there, be in the sun a little more. So I picked up playing golf.
Okay, great.
And a handicap 9 so far.
Nice.
Right? And I want to be a scratch golfer, and that means play enough times out there and compete. I mean, that's the entrepreneurial mindset.
Getting to 9 is quite an accomplishment.
And so for me to play golf 80 times a year, it'll force me to go out there, right?
Right.
And I can take meetings, whatnot. Those are the two things that changed. Hmm. And because you're very intentional about allocating your 24 hours a day for family, business, and people around you. And so it was really easy for me to do that. These are the two that absolutely make sense. And sleep is very important.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very underrated.
Now I got to ask you, you know, one of our favorite things to help entrepreneurs is the legacy piece. Yeah. You started the Nobel Institute. Tell us about it, why you started it, and what are you trying to help?
Absolutely. So we formalized the whole concept of giving back to communities with a very specific focus areas. And that involves health, education, global affairs, sports, and AI. And I'll focus on a couple of those. Very early on in 2016 and 17, when we were building the company, Nipa and I talked about there will be success, but we always have to give back and have the communities that we serve. And going back to 1996, when we immigrated and my dad sacrificed his education journey into being a dishwasher, we want to do something for both her parents and my parents that be meaningful. Both our parents don't understand what we do with technology.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to be able to have a focus that by 2030, we want to impact 100 schools. And by that, I mean either build or improve the infrastructure. We don't run the operations. And so far, we got about 21 of those schools that we had touched.
Mm.
And obviously, the numbers will accelerate. And so that falls under that the education side. And on the health side, after my health scare, I thought about a lot is that Indian folks from that subcontinent, whether you're from Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, or some of those other areas, we have hereditary issue with cholesterols and LDLs and other things. And I want to be able to fund certain things to drive focus areas on ApoB particles, which is very, very important to maintain at a certain level. So you minimize plaque increase in your arteries. And then lipoprotein A, which we don't have medicine at these days. NIH and others spend billions of dollars every year. We still don't have medicine for lipoprotein A. So I'm creating more awareness. So we decided to put the Nobel Institute out there, get the 501c3 designation, and fund some research. So our goal by 2035 is that ApoB particles, 100, and lipoprotein A, these two should be part of the standard lipid panels when people go to their doctors every year. Now, the big pharma, they're going to push back a little bit on that, and that's okay.
Right.
It's near and dear to me, so I'm going to fight my fight.
Right.
The second thing would be is that we want to do a few research, maybe fund 3 research with a few institutions around the country so they can advance medicine that could be very close to our genetics. And so the regular statin isn't going to be as effective for us compared to another person.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to fund that. So those are the things kind of formulated. And the fact that we could go out there, right, and bring in other folks who can contribute to that. But the heart attack was really accelerated that thought.
Right,
let's formalize that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before I ask our signature question, I you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm listening to this show, and you know, the two letters that are on everyone's mind, you're in every day. And I just love maybe your thoughts about AI, and also thinking about it because we're in graduation season. You know, for kids graduating today, what would be your advice?
That's a great question, and we launched our own AI company 7 years ago. That's a separate company. And we have seen very early on how AI could be very helpful to an individual or businesses. Mm-hmm. And I do think that AI is here to stay for the long run. But there is a little bit of hyperbole in terms of some areas. It's mm-hmm. been kind of overblown a little bit on that. And that touches into the graduates, the young folks that are coming in. Yes, there may be a shift in how the corporations are hiring these young, but I want you to know is that we have nearly 70 people we're bringing in our organization this summer in the Dallas Frisco office. And there is 8 weeks of AI training, so we can make our consultant AI native consultant.
Wow.
What we're asking our young folks and also the existing folks is that use the tool so you could 3x, 4x the outcomes you want to drive. Because whether it's our clients or in our operational efficiency, we want to increase our throughput. We want to double our outcomes, whatever that may be. And so corporations are going to hire. And I know there is a lot of fear about, by the way, there's a lot of positive, right? It's solving things, we're getting things done faster. And there's a lot of these good tools, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are actually building this application layer. And I say, absolutely go out there, right? Just make sure that you're solving problem that is being asked in the market. Mm-hmm. And because you could build a lot of things that's gonna die. But if you're solving something with AI faster and there is a market demand, absolutely. And people out there that is graduating looking for jobs, I'd say that it doesn't matter whether you're a sociology graduate or finance, make AI part of your journey in specific areas. I use it daily. I save 2 to 3 hours in whatever things that I do. So I encourage everybody to go out there and do that. We are going to see a massive amount of spike in entrepreneurship because people can solve when technology became barriers. Right. If you're not in the technology space, and I'm going to see that, we're going to see that a lot of people are going to start their own businesses. Mm-hmm. No, that's good.
That's solid. So it's a question we ask at the end of every show. And I think you've answered it in so many ways, I want to hear how you put it. So we're granting you this giant billboard down the street here in Times Square, okay, in New York, and every entrepreneur and business leader in the world is going to see. What would be your message and why?
I'm going to give it two messages. One is for the billboard. The other one is just for people so they can understand is that it could be difficult, but it could be very rewarding in that journey. So the sign on the billboard would be dream big. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from Siena College, my alma mater. We made a $35 million pledge to that school. And they built a Noble Hall out there. Inside the Noble Hall, there's a giant letter that says dream big.
Hmm. Love it. Yes.
And of course, we have the personal jet and I named the LLC that we keep it under. It's called Dream Big Air. There's a lot of other areas. What I want people to know is that don't let somebody tell you your dream isn't big enough. Don't let somebody tell you you're dreaming too big, right? You got to go out there, right? And you got to dream big. And then you got to put the work. So it would say dream big and play the long game. Mm-hmm. Way too often when we see success in the social media out there, we tend to feel like we're falling behind. You know, everybody's getting ahead. It doesn't matter.
Every 5 minutes.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. If you're going to touch on something for your clients, for your teams, and for your own personal journey, you got to play the long game. So for us, I talk about is that we want to build a business where our logo is going to be in 25 metro cities in the tallest buildings. It's going to scream loud, MTX. And that means we got to be in it for the 20, 30 years. And until somebody takes over that business and runs it on behalf of all of our shareholders, and that's the way we look at that. So dream big and play the long game. That's my message for the billboard. But on the other side, man, building companies, businesses are hard. And I have seen, and I had that conversation out at the dinner table with a bunch of other entrepreneurs. Some people do it because they have their personal beliefs like I do, is that you got to do it for the right reason. Right. There is others, they see glory because other people are doing it. That's why they want to do that, which is the wrong reason. Mm-hmm. And there is other people, they want to do it because they want to make money. And that's also the wrong reason. The wealth part is the outcome of that. If you do it for the right reason, where you want to go out there, prove that you can bring something to the market that's going to solve your customer needs. And that is something that I believe in, and I encourage people to go out there. Wealth is going to take care of itself. Other things are going to take care of itself. And a lot of us, a lot of people are going to become successful entrepreneurs, may never get the limelight, may never get the glory, all of that. It doesn't matter. If you can solve your customer needs, then you also get to elevate others. Maybe they will become entrepreneurs, but they will realize that you do it for the right reason. And that's my message, is that do it for the right reason. Forget the glory, forget the accolade, all of that. Things will fall in place.
Hard not to be motivated around him.
No.
So
keep dreaming big, right?
Exactly. That's it. Keep dreaming big. Yeah, and those are great messages. And And thank you so much for being here, because this was really a terrific conversation.
I have to thank you personally, too, being around him.
Yeah.
I have been dreaming bigger, too.
So I've noticed.
It's contagious, yes, I promise.
And we're very excited that Sami's around us, right? We get to bounce ideas. So he's a good advisor for us in the way, not just for me, for Nipa and the kids as well. So, and one of the things we say is that even UBS will evolve, right? Is that the new generation, right? That how do you serve your clients? We're thinking is that you got the new generation that's coming up. So so we appreciate your partnership in this and UBS as general.
Yeah.
And your stories. Mm-hmm. Now we have something in common, right?
Yeah. Is that, yes, we do.
We have both had health scare. And
absolutely. And life-changing, but brings you the messages and brings home. And seeing those two wonderful boys that are sitting inside, that's what matters.
And don't stop going to your cardiologist. Keep going.
I certainly will. Sammy, you need to go.
Yes.
Listen, your journey from humble beginnings to building a global business is so inspiring. But like we said, what stands out even more is the intentionality around your family and the impact and clearly the legacy that you want to leave behind. So thank you so much for joining us here on the Leadership Lounge. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, share it with a fellow entrepreneur or business leader or your mother. Just stay tuned for more conversations with some of the world's top minds. Until next time, this is Mitch Slater and Saman Sami saying thank you so much for joining us on the Leadership Lounge, powered by UBS.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.